appreciate the thoughts that were shared, and certainly we've been given many gifts just to be here this morning. This was mentioned as today is Father's Day. I've titled the message, Gifts from Fathers. I would like to just leave a little bit of opportunity here if there's something that that you would like to share from your own experience of a gift that that you want to pass on to your children, gift from Father that you will pass on. Yesterday we had I had the privilege of working with my brother Dan. He came to help me do hay, and during the course of the day, the baler broke down, and we had to get one little part for a chain that we need to fix. And Dan said, you know, I think I have that in my truck. You know what? That sounded just like Dad. He would have it. But, you know, it was just the right piece, and it was the perfect thing. I couldn't believe it. Yet there was Dad. All right, what are some things that you've received that you would like to pass on? Okay. All right, thank you for that. That's a beautiful trait. Generosity. It's something that can't be taught without example, hardly. Thank you for that. Very big part of his life. Okay, thank you for that. Okay, now I'd like to think about different fathers in the Bible, and I've chosen several of them that are very noteworthy but very familiar, and one from the New Testament that I would like to look at. But if we would look at these, the traits that these fathers had, now, not all good men in the Bible, not all men that were approved of God were always good fathers. And we can think of several. We can think of David, for example. He was a man that was after God's heart, and yet there were some things in his life and his parenting that were really amiss, and his children went astray and caused a lot of bitter disappointment. The fact is, none of us are perfect. None of us have even had a perfect father. None of us have. And yet there are things that, as we look at what God has given us, there's a legacy and a heritage that can be passed on if we focus on God and what is right and what is good. Values, in many ways, are absorbed by what we are rather than by what is actually dictated or what is taught. We teach by what we are. We also teach with what we say, but actually, in reality, it's much less as being caught that way than what we actually are. The first one I'd like to look at this morning is Noah. One thing I have to think about in Steve, that isn't here, Harley Steve, he always had a connection, a way of getting people. He loved genealogies, and he would connect you with just about anybody. Well, you know, we're all connected to this man, to this father. This is where we're going to come together, Noah. We all have our connections back there, so we're all related in that sense. And as we look at the life of Noah, just one incident. If we turn to Genesis, if we look at Genesis 6, the first part of that chapter says that God was discouraged with his creation, or it doesn't say discouraged, but he was willing to put an end to mankind except for Noah. And he made a way that Noah and his family could be saved. And he gave careful instructions to Noah to save his household. And it was a lot of work, and it was a big project. And I don't know how long it was that Noah worked on that. It seems to indicate that it was 120 years, but there's a little speculation on that. But whatever, Noah, it was a big project. It was unheard of, and it required a tremendous amount of faith to believe that God was actually going to do this, because it had never happened before. But the gift that God gave, the gift that Noah gave to his family and to us today is that gift of faith and obedience. And in Genesis 6, verse 22, after the conclusion of this story, it says these words: "Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he." And that's just a tremendous statement there. Those are just a few words. None of them are difficult. None of them are take a dictionary to look up. We know what every one of those words mean. Simple words. "Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he." That was a tremendous gift that God allowed Noah to pass on to his generations. And then we have the story of Abraham. And about the same time, we have the story of Job, chronologically. They could have lived at the same time frame. And the story of Job, God is giving his defense of, or, you know, things were different, and God is God's own testimony of Job, that he was a perfect and upright man, one that feared God and eschewed evil. And of his family, we only have these words. It says that in verse 5 of chapter 1, it says, "And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, 'It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts.'" And then it has these few words: "Thus did Job continually." Job's life of devotion was one that was a tremendous gift to his children, in spite of the fact that their life was short. Their life was terminated pretty early. This is a testimony to Job of his walk with God, his devotion, and his faithfulness in serving God in this way. And it doesn't say that his sons had sinned or his daughters had sinned. But it does say that he thought it may be and cursed God in their hearts. His walk with God was so that he made every provision for them to be right with God. And then we have the story of Abraham. And one of the most outstanding things is Genesis chapter 22, when God called Abraham after he finally had a son and asked him to take his son and offer him. Who would think that that sacrifice would ever be a gift? Who would think that Abraham offering his son would ever be a gift that we could look back on and say that it was a tremendous blessing to humankind? But that's exactly the way it turned out. That great trial, that great difficulty that Abraham experienced in that mountain was something that we can look back today and see a tremendous walk, a walk of faith and a tremendous faith that Abraham had to God. Just the things it says there and in later in the book of Hebrews, where it indicates that he was, he felt like maybe God was going to raise him from the dead or whatever. Whatever, God's instructions to Abraham were clear. And he didn't know how God was going to provide, but he knew that he was. And he was faithful right to the letter, to every word, to obey God in that way. And so, in that way, it's a tremendous blessing to us today. And I just have to I think about this verse 18 in Genesis 22, where God finally said to Abraham after all of this had passed, after he had taken Isaac and prepared to kill him, God stopped him right at the last minute and gave him a ram instead. And finally, he says in verse 18, "And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice." And so that's us today. That reaches right down through time to us in a very direct way. Today we think of Abraham as a number of ways. One is a man of faith. We think of him as a friend of God. We think of him as someone that had he lived in a difficult time, and yet he was faithful to God. He also was not a perfect man. His life was not lived without mistakes, and yet the things that are important, his faith, his walk with God, is something that is a blessing to us today. And so it's an encouragement to us as fathers that the things that we pass on, none of us are perfect. I know that, you know, I can speak for myself, and I know that I have made many mistakes, and I know that I know I've experienced forgiveness. I've experienced a lot of good things, but I also know that I'm not unusual. I think all of us can say that, and that Abraham is a blessing to us today because, you know, there were shortcomings in his life, but he was a man of faith, and that's what we remember him for. And this is just a tremendous verse that God said, "And thee, and thy seed, shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice." You know, are there any Abrahams out in our world today where God says that because you have obeyed my voice, that your seed, your family is going to be a blessing to the world. I think there's many of them. And I think it behooves us to be faithful in the area that God calls us, and so that nations can be blessed. Now I'd like to turn to one more father, and this is actually probably someone that, or maybe he lived or maybe he didn't. I don't know. It's a story at least. But this is the one, this is the story of the father of the prodigal son in Luke chapter 15, verse 11. And again, this is familiar. Every one of these are very familiar characters to us, and this one is as well. But this is what he said. A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me." And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country. And there he wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine. And he fain would have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, "How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants." And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion on him, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son." But the father said unto his servants, "Bring forth the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found." And they began to be merry. And now the elder son was in the field, and he drew nigh to the house, and he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, "Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound." And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, "Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment. And yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf." And he said unto him, "Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found." You know, this is a tremendous story of the love of God. And Jesus had three parables in this chapter. And I realize that the original gospel was not divided, or the writing was not divided into chapters and verses like we have today. But each one of these deals with something that was lost and is found. And in this chapter, and in this story, it's very clear that he is showing us that God is like this father that had these two sons. And the younger one we always raise an indignation for, because here was a man that just simply couldn't wait till his father was dead, wanted his inheritance early, and then went and wasted it. What a waste, we think. And it was. It was a waste. And yet, what was the father's response to that? It was one of forgiveness. You know, first of all, we see that the father allowed choices. And when God created man, way back at the beginning of time, He made man with a choice. He created man as a person that could choose to serve him or choose to obey or choose to not. And man has lived with those choices ever since. The father and the prodigal, he also allowed choices. And even when this person chose to do wrong, he still allowed those choices. And his response was that of grace, of eagerness to his return, of compassion, of love, of gifts. Maybe we think it's no wonder the elder son was angry that his father had showed them, because God should have done something else to this person, made him suffer a while. But he knew that he probably knew that his younger son suffered. But we see love in a tremendous way. And the very interesting thing that I just love this story for the fact that Jesus changed it from what the Jews were used to hearing. And the Jews were used to hearing this story about the man that said, when the prodigal returned, he said, "You've messed up your life. You've made your bed. Now you'll have to stay there." And there wasn't the forgiveness and compassion. But Jesus said that he fell on his neck. He ran and he fell on his neck and kissed him. It also says that he was along. He saw him a long way off. Excuse me. He saw him a long way off. And when someone is a long ways off, and we're over 50, it's pretty hard to see who that person is. It's pretty hard to recognize somebody, even for me. It's hard to recognize them all the way at the back of the church there. It's just, but I don't know how far this person was, but obviously, it says he saw him a long ways off, so, you know, God is, he's all seeing, and he's able to do that, that just shows a number of things. That it shows that God's love and was tremendous in allowing choices. He showed him compassion. He was eager for his return, and he showed tremendous mercy and grace to him. And we see it in the gifts that were given: return to sonship, the best robe, the celebration of killing the fatted calf. These are all tremendous blessings that God has bestowed on us as well, and made us his son. And in spite of the fact that many of us have walked our ways away from him, either in rebellion or in self-righteousness, he still wants relationship and he wants fellowship. And then when the elder son heard about all this commotion that was going on and found out what it was, his response was one of condemnation and sulking and rebellion. Why did God do this? Why does the father treat the son this way because of, you know, all his wasteful ways and so on? And father's love was extended to the elder son as well. And he went out there and entreated him and talked to him. He didn't just let him go, but he tried to get him to see this, and he didn't change his ways. He didn't change his message because the elder son didn't receive him, but he said, "This was meet, or it was appropriate, it was necessary, it was the right thing to do. For this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found." He also told him that that all that I have is thine. You know, God's goodness is not reserved for His qualities are for all of his children, and it's not reserved to just those that are. It's reserved to all that call him that are his, that call him Father. And so, you know, Jesus is giving us a tremendous lesson on what God is willing to do for us, and it's the best Father's Day gift that we can have, is to know the love of God and to be able to, in a human way, pass it on to our children. I'd like to share a little bit what Randy Alcorn says about Father's Day. Some of us have appreciated some of his writings. I mean, probably a number of you have read the book Safely Home, which is one of his. And it's an interesting read. When we consider our Father's Day sacrifice to us, any sacrifice we can make for our children are small. And I appreciate what Joseph shared this morning, that even the waking up at night, the 3 o'clock night times when our eyes are just burning and we just can hardly get up. I'm glad I don't have to go through that anymore. But I remember those days. And, we didn't really think they were really good for that. But I tell you, family's terribly important. And that's part of it that makes it important. So, anyhow. Fatherhood is an incredible privilege. We should thank God for it every day, which too easily we grow accustomed to and take for granted. If we're not careful, occasionally resent. For instance, after weeks without having a good night's sleep. Some of you are going through that now. But he gives a number of points that I think are important, and I'd like to just echo these. He says, read to your children. A child who doesn't learn to love to read will not love to read God's word. And there's some exceptions here, but that's generally true. We should read to our children. I know some people read to their children even before they're born, just so they get used to hearing the voice, and they claim it helps. Now, I don't know. I can't say that for sure, but anyhow, it's obvious that the love is there. The love of learn to read, or love to read. Teach them to love to read. Today, we're living in an age when entertainment is going to be the big call. It often has been the big thing. We don't have TV in our homes and so on, but we have other things that can entertain rather than educate, and that should be reading to children books, good stories, good lessons are important, even when they're can't even understand them all. He makes a point of teach your children to be grateful. Do all you can to deliver them from the entitlement mentality poisoning our culture. The mentality that says, I deserve this, and that's not fair, and it's mine, not yours. Teach them to not be whiners. Teach them to say thank you. Teach them that money is earned. It doesn't appear out of nowhere. Teach them that all of this requires one primary thing, that we ourselves are grateful, not whiners, that we are good stewards, that we are quick to say thanks. That children often fail to do what we say, but will seldom fail to do what we do. And that's what I said earlier, is that values are very often absorbed, not spoken. And children may fail to do what we do, say, but they will seldom fail to do what we do. Teach your children to confess and repent by confessing and repenting in their presence. Admit you're wrong. Say, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. It may teach them more than you would than you would have by never failing, and far more than by pretending you don't fail. Grandfathers, maybe you have regrets about not having been the best fathers. Say you're sorry to your grown children and ask God to help you be the best grandpa you can be. Loving, reading Bible stories to and playing with your grandchildren and influencing those precious children to love Jesus. You know, that's a blessing that we're experiencing at this point. Give generously and involve children in giving. Consider your reason for living to both glorify God and pass on your children an inheritance of bold and deep faith. Somebody has said, it only takes money to make an inheritance, but it takes godly living to pass on a heritage. I think that's true. Remember that Jesus came full of grace and truth. Most mistakes in parenting are a failure to act according to the truth on the one hand and a spirit of grace on the other. Never choose truth over grace or grace over truth. The two are both essential and should be inseparable. Children raised with grace but not truth become legalists or rebels. Children raised with grace but not truth wander aimlessly, falling off ledges because their parents fail to post signs and build guardrails and hold their hands, which could have saved them. I think that's a tremendous point that we need, that grace and truth should not be separated, and that we need both in order to raise our family for the Lord. Fear God that your children may be blessed. The Bible says in Psalms 112, verse 1, it says, blessed is the man who fears the Lord, who greatly delights in his commandments. I believe that that's a gift that we can give them that they can pass on to their children. It says, cultivate your marriage and protect it. Don't drift different directions. I believe that one of the things that has impressed me over years, and that is that that the best gift that a father can give his children is to love his mother well. And I believe that that's true yet today. And I'm sorry when that isn't the case, but it gives tremendous security to the family. And then finally, in John 15, it says, Jesus said that without me, ye can do nothing. And I believe that that's the important thing, is to have Christ in our life and to be known as followers of him. I appreciated much the words that Mark shared with us this morning about the disciples were alone. They were a small group, but they had Jesus as their leader. And today, many centuries later, we can have the courage because Jesus is going to build his church, and it says the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And so Jesus was not a father in the sense that we are. He didn't have natural sons, but he is our father, and he's the best one that can be. Let's follow him in all of life. Let's come before the Lord in prayer.